This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, halflings! How are you doing? Hope you're well. It's me, Jasper William Cartwright, and I am joined today by...
Leander Onati Lewis Nyawa, but everybody calls me Onati!
Yay! And...
Jeremy Cobb, but Russ Lisetsky calls me Vanth, as in the Star Wars character, most recently from The Mandalorian. Also, awesome.
Ooh!
Fam,
very cool.
Who is that? I've been watching Mandalorian, but like I'm only on season one.
I'm looking it up right now. I looked it up a long time ago because Russ suggested three nicknames quite a while ago, and this is the third one.
I was going to say I remember Russ submitting one before.
Cobb. What is his name? What is the actor's name? His full name is Cobb Vanth, as in C-O-B-B, my last name, Vanth, also known as the Marshal. So if you've seen season two of the Mandalorian, he's the character played by Timothy Oliphant.
I literally just watched that episode. So cool.
Yeah. Very cool.
So cool. It's a good
that
episode.
That is awesome.
They fight a worm
thank
thing.
Thank you, Russ.
Yeah. Nice, Russ. Well,
it's a good,
excellent
strong
work.
Nickname, especially with the Cobb connection. Because that's the thing. Russ didn't specify. This was a sleeper pun.
I
don't know if it's a pun, but it is a sleeper reference.
But this is the thing. I was actually thinking about these nicknames the other day, and I was thinking that eventually we're going to run out of nicknames, right?
Yeah.
Like, eventually
not
we're
possible.
Going to get to a point where... nicknames that are puns, right? Like, there's only so many Cobb-related or Jeremy-related puns that one can make. So I was like, eventually, they're just going to be, like, not related to you, which I'm fine with. Like, I'm happy for people just, like, and so-and-so calls me pizza. Like, that's fine. Do you know what I mean?
But pizza like, the Cobb.
But and I thought that was it. I thought maybe Vanth was that. But no, Russ Lisetsky has just nailed it.
Yeah.
Pulled the tauntaun wool over all of our eyes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well done, Russ.
Very well done.
Unbelievable, unbelievable stuff.
Oh my god!
This is the wrong dungeon and the wrong dragon.
Full prince vibe? Woof.
This makes them even more black.
Cake glitches and pitches.
And lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
No.
On a nat 20.
No.
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting and I love it.
Yeah. We're about to get into something real big now.
Hello, halflings. How's it going? So today we are going to be discussing a recent blog post and controversy, I guess, surrounding the release of the Candlekeep Mysteries that was released by Wizards of the Coast. This is in relation to POC Gamer, who worked as a writer on this particular adventure. And there was an article posted, and it's been everywhere. It's been a big hot topic.
I think I first saw it on our Discord.
Yeah.
Yes, the Discord was the first place I saw it.
Gabriel shared it.
Yes. Shout out to Gabriel. Thank you.
Thanks,
very
Gabriel.
Much.
Thanks, Gabe.
And so this is a definitely a tricky one, and we thought this was something that we wanted to have a chat about because it's definitely a a tricky one, shall we say. So I will just sort of give a brief overview of sort of what has happened, and I'll be pulling from the article that was written on the POC Gamer website. You can I'll absolutely put a link to this in the show notes below, so feel free to check it out for yourself. I always counsel people, don't just listen to us blindly, like, go and read the thing yourself and formulate your own opinion, because it's a positive thing to do that. But POC Gamer worked as a writer on the Candlekeep Mysteries in creating what is called the Book of Cinders, which is a sort of like a side mission or a,
is it
a quest
PC
within.
Gamer or POC Gamer?
POC Gamer, sorry. POC Gamer, yeah.
Oh, wow. I can't find this website. Please continue.
I found PC
Gamer, and that was why I was like, was it PC? Sorry, please continue. I'm still trying to find the specific, because I was on a different website. So I
it is on the WhatsApp group, I believe. Okay. I've just sent it again for you. So yes.
Please continue. Sorry to interrupt.
No. So yes, the Book of Cinders, which is a quest within this book itself, and basically they speak about their experience of having written this, the several stages they went through in order to basically get it approved. There was a pitch that they had to do of the sort of thing they wanted to introduce to Candlekeep Mysteries. They were selected, they received some information, and they basically went to have to go away and write something with a max word count of 8,000 words, and there was some minor direction on that, and then they started sort of a drafting process. It went back, I think, twice, they say in this particular thing. I think the impression I get is it went back twice, and there was a little bit of change happened with the Gripply race, is that, if I'm pronouncing that correctly?
Yeah, the Gripply.
Which are a like frog-like humanoid, I believe. Lovely little frog peeps.
I think Graham uses he/him pronouns.
Ah, perfect. Thank you very much, Jeremy. So there was a little backwards and forwards there until finally he was told that his adventure had been submitted for playtesting and initial review, and that the editor then could be in touch with him to basically answer any questions, etc., etc. And then several months later, he was informed that the adventure was selected to go to publication, and a few months after that, he was asked for a headshot and a bio and other little pieces of information, etc. And in this article, or in this blog post, he says that he was going on the assumption of no news is good news, and that because he hadn't heard too much about this from the editor or etc., that he was assuming that not too much when would have changed. Cut to then when it's sort of getting released and pre-released, and finally Graham gets a chance to sit down and read the adventure itself, and needless to say, Graham was disappointed in what he then read. Yeah,
there was one thing before. He had gone on interviews and the press release started before he'd received that final copy. So he was then outside in these streets telling people about a really exciting thing, what he'd done, without knowing that major changes had been made. He hadn't been informed of those changes, even at the point of press release.
Yes, right. Absolutely. Yeah. So
like poor Adrian Brody with the thin red line. It's an obscure reference, but for those of you who don't know, prior to ever being in The Pianist and eventually winning it, I think becoming the youngest Oscar winner for Best Actor, Adrian Brody was in a movie called The Thin Red Line, directed by a director named Terrence Malick. If you don't know who Terrence Malick is, look him up. He's great. But Terrence Malick was this mysterious director who basically, essentially, he'd just come back after like 30 years, or 20 years of having disappeared, having directed two classic movies. And everybody wanted to be in this movie. Adrian Brody landed the lead role and promoted the movie, only to discover when the movie was released, his role had been reduced to 5 minutes of screen time and I think one or two lines. And
wow.
Completely different protagonist. Like, this was before he was a star. So this was like the chance of a lifetime. This dude's been promoting this film and then found out at the premiere that his role was basically just a barely, like a tiny side character in what was supposed to be his movie. Absolutely brutal.
That is so brutal. So, yeah, similar.
Kind of like that.
kind of like that. Yeah. And so, so yes, has got all of these interviews, etc. And finally then sort of sat down to read the Book of Cinders, and felt like a lot of things had been changed, including some of the language used within the book. Graham specifically refers to some of the language being colonial, and throwing away a lot of the kind of lore and backstory of certain species and races that he'd sort of very specifically spotlighted within the adventure to try and sort of humanize them and give them more complexity, and then felt that they were like stripped back and then, you know, referred to in ways that he absolutely hadn't referred to them, etc.
Yeah, I think the Kripili were described as being primitive, although what he was trying to convey was an ancient and impossibly ancient culture melding with like a modern culture, so elements of like their ancient history remained inside of this kind of modernization, if you will.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car, you should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Yes, and I believe as well, let me just double check. Yes, so he refers to the Yuan Ti, who were the other sort of main race within this adventure, that having a lot of their sort of lore and backstory that he'd created involving the world serpent and things like this having been completely stripped away, and so therefore they kind of just come across like very kind of evil, bad snake people, as opposed to anything else. So that is a sort of overview of what has happened here. We've sat and read through this article and had a look through the adventure itself. Jeremy, do you want to actually jump in and tell us what you've looked at the adventure a little bit now, and what were your like thoughts having digested both?
So initially I was reading through it, and what Graham says in terms of the, because Graham on, it's a two-part article, and Graham lists the initial changes that were, like at the end he goes through and lists the changes that were made. And I agree with what he said at the beginning. The beginning of the adventure, the there's like a book that's mentioned with this story that is honestly like pointless to actually figuring out the adventure. That is true. It's like a book that tells the future, or alleged, they think it might be telling the past, but it's actually telling the events of the present. So it was a prophecy. It was a prophetic book that was written a long time ago, but it doesn't help you to solve anything. It's like you literally just go and fight some Yuan Ti. That's it. Mm. There's, it's not like a deep thing that you have to try and figure out. Mm. But the main crux of the issue is the description of the Kripili. And there are actually two references. There are two uses of the word primitive in the adventure. The first one is in reference to refugee houses, because the Kripili have been pushed off of their land by the invading Yuan Ti, who are currently occupying their village and temple. Mm-hmm. And so when I read that, I was like, wait, so this was but the refugee houses, I've never seen a non-primitive refugee house, like not like a recent one. These people just fled their homes. They're having to.
And, sure. A refugee house by definition will not have luxuries.
Yeah. They wouldn't have had the opportunity
purely functional.
To yes. And even so they describe them as having been decorated with, granted, these, it's not the houses that they're describing, it's actually the trade post, because you meet them at a trade post. The trade post is decorated, but the second usage is in reference to the decoration of giant crab claws in their actual residences and storage buildings inside of the village itself. So I do, after reading that, I'm like, okay, yeah, there is colonialist language being used in this context. But the, I remember in, I think there was a Twitter thread that Graham had made or something, because I remember reading something about some of the specific ideas that he'd originally had in there for the decoration. And if I'm remembering correctly, the ideas that he had were much cooler than just crab parts. Crab parts are cool, but you can do a lot more.
If these people
have been around for that long, just throw in a couple more descriptions. Like, that's all it takes. And then in regards to the, because the other complaint was that the Yuan-Ti's backstory had been, or their motives were basically completely gone. And it is true, specifically for the evil Yuan-Ti. The good Yuan-Ti, their motives had changed. I think originally they were trying to awaken the world serpent and basically make life better for people. In the published adventure, they are actually looking through the temple for artifacts from past groups of Yuan-Ti invaders, I think still to try and make things better for people. Like they were there with the Gripplies' consent. It was, they were trying to find relics left behind by the Yuan-Ti that had raided through this area in ages past. And they were in the process of clearing some rubble when the evil Yuan-Ti descended. Now, here's an interesting point. The evil Yuan-Ti, I'm going to look through the screenshots that I made there, because Graham says that they are supposed to, like, they are basically reduced to being evil for the sake of evil. And that is, in function, I believe, true, but in form, there is a reference to them having other reasons what they're doing. But they never explain what those reasons are.
Good.
That's so the bare minimum. Excellent. Okay.
It's very, and the original adventure clearly did have motives for them to be there doing
you're
what
not,
they're doing.
You're not evil because... dot dot dot. Like that's
because reasons. Oh, complexity.
It was very strange. Yes. Here's the quote: "The evil serpent folk are here for a particular purpose, and as a rule, they have no quarrel with anyone who doesn't directly threaten their plan or try to impede what they're doing. The only real, like, clear reasoning that I can see is that they like eating the Gripplies' eggs." Because it does specify that lizard folk and Yuan-Ti enjoy eating the Gripplies' eggs. And so they have a difficult time. And that's, I believe, in the description at the very end of the adventure. They describe the Gripply and have a... They have a stat block for a Gripply. They're really cool. It looks really nice.
Cute.
Like, I like the... and they have, like, they can use their tongue to fight and stuff. Ooh. Like, it's really cool. I can see why Graham wanted to bring him back, because I think the Gripply had existed in a previous edition. It mentions specifically that lizard folk and Yuan-Ti like to eat their eggs. So the implication seems to be that these Yuan-Ti raiders showed up to eat their eggs and then also were holding some unholy ritual to open a sarcophagus. It's not clear why, except that they were torturing the good Yuan-Ti who were there. Through, like, this ceremony was also, like, in the process of opening the sarcophagus. Maybe I misread something, but the wider the sarcophagus opened, the worse, the more damaged the good Yuan-Ti became, who were tied to this altar. I was not clear on how that was happening. I may have just misread that part of the adventure, but essentially, they're doing a bunch of evil stuff because they're evil, and also they like to eat the eggs. That's the impression. And I do agree it does seem to have been reduced from, based on what Graham, I obviously cannot give a full opinion because I have not read what Graham had originally submitted, and I don't believe Graham is able to release that. We're essentially hearing Graham's story. I don't see a reason to disbelieve him, but it's, it's, as far as I'm concerned, it seems like a pretty, assuming that Graham is correct, it seems like Wizards did strip a lot of the culture and creativity out of the adventure and unfortunately fall back into colonialist stereotypes.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like the thing that kind of like vexes me the most about this whole nonsensicality is this. So you get the products, nah? You get it from the writer, the creator. They're happy. They're living their best life. You want to make changes. Now, we all know, like in any creative field, that you just contact the creator, discuss your changes, you have a back and forth, and you come to compromises. Like, it's not uncommon. So what I don't understand is why they ghosted him for like however long, and then sent him on press releases. Surely somebody was listening to some of those like podcasts and like checking in. I don't like what, at what point did they kind of go, we're just like sending this person out to the wolves here. And then on top of that, like, okay, cool. Like intellectual property contracts aside and NDAs aside, the fact that they own his entire adventure, like in totality, fine. He signed a contract, cool. And he probably read it really thoroughly, I'm sure. But also like they, but to then make such major changes to something that, especially if you're wanting to bring in new creators and fresh perspectives, like that was what the drive was for, to then make those changes and not consult the creator is just a little bit like cart very far away from horse to me. Like, let alone...
I think... yeah, I think that the issue then that for me is there is that you're bringing in, you know, new voices specifically to diversify the writing team that you use for these types of adventures, and then a team which is kind of quite publicly and famously not the most diverse, you know, the sort of managing editors among in Wizards of the Coast, to then come in and change things so drastically without any kind of consultation, then exactly, I mean, I am in complete agreement with you, Yunati. It seems so counterintuitive. Like, why kind of bother bringing them in the first place?
You know what I mean?
If, do you know what I mean? If you're then going
to
strip away the things that make it...
I guess it's easier to edit something than to create something from whole cloth.
No, absolutely. Sure. But I think that, but why would you bring a new voice in and then strip away all the parts that make this adventure a uniquely new voice? Like, yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, because otherwise this could effectively just be another D&D adventure. So therefore I go, well, this is pointless that you brought someone else new in. You might as well have gone back to like a similar writer that you've used before.
Yeah.
If you then take away all the cultural elements which that new voice brought, yeah. You know?
And then the other thing that was that kind of like smelled like nonsensicalities again to me was... Okay, cool. So then when he reached out to other people who'd also worked with Wizards, like on the Reddits, and they were like, that sounds like a nightmare scenario. And I think like in any writer's process, that sounds like a nightmare scenario to not get your due diligence, not be consulted, to not, you know, be part of the process when it comes to edits. But other writers are saying that they hadn't had this, they haven't had this experience. So now I'm left with a big fat why. Either it's oversight, or as you said, Jeremy, it's easier to edit something rather than create something from scratch, or sparkling racism. I don't know. I don't know. Pick one.
I don't know anything about publishing. I'm trying to think of possible reasons. Is it possible that if they wanted to try and shorten the original adventure even more, because Graham says that he had shortened it. I don't know.
It was shortened by several thousand words. But I think
it was like 6,000, I think, in the version that he submitted, and I think it was shortened even further.
Yeah.
What's weird about it is that like the descriptions of the actual Gripley's home sounds cool. Like they don't, if it's really the word primitive, like if they swapped out the word primitive with creatively, like primitively instead of like creative, or something like that, then it's like, okay, cool.
That's fine.
And like you get rid of that part of the problem.
Yeah. And I think that is the major bone of contention, because like as a POC creator, those things matter. Like your name is now on something. Like you are actively making choices about being very specific about the language that you use to describe people that could in any way be equated to any like, you know, real life experience, right? Under no circumstances would you use a word like that. If you know what I mean? Like, I mean, okay, obviously I'm generalizing from my perspective as well here, but I know for myself, and it would be never. Never. The word savages, mm-hmm. like, or primitive. Never. Never.
It's just not a good idea.
Yeah. Frankly, and it's not necessary in this context. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's we're not doing history here. We're doing fantasy.
Yeah, it's okay.
Well, even in the context of history, it's like...
It carries too much baggage.
Yeah.
It's perspective as well. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? What is primitive to one is perspective, I think.
Yeah.
Because it's just that you have an assumption about the way that you live your life versus the way someone else lives theirs. I think that the real big bone of contention... I have with this as well, is that I think it once again shows for me, from Wizards of the Coast, that there is a slight lack of understanding when it comes to what you put out there and how that is then perceived. Because the issue that I have here is that whilst they may look at it and go like, you know, I feel like they'll kind of hold their hands up maybe and say like, oh, we shouldn't have put the word primitive in there, right? And for me, that's not the issue. The issue is that you strip back all of the other stuff which humanizes them. Because what you're doing is, if you pick this up and you're not someone who is well-versed on maybe the culture that this is being drawn from or something like that, you're not going to have the vocabulary to accurately depict or accurately describe these things. You're being asked to then basically just to make it up. And so I think that we've said quite a few times that like Wizards needs to do more kind of hand-holding when it comes to increasing cultural representation within its work, because you need to give people the tools. You know, you need to give people a new set of words to use instead of things like fucking primitive. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. You need to give them a different way of describing these things, so we're not constantly just going back to the same tropes, the same old stereotypes. Yeah. So like, it is really fucking important that Graham has chosen to describe something in a way that feels more culturally sensitive or is broadening the kind of general lexicon of D&D, then it's really important that stays in and isn't cut for the sake of a few, because, oh, we need to cut words. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and the thing is,
kept in some form.
Yeah, and the thing is that, like, that word primitive is clearly coming from the unconscious bias of whoever sat down and edited that. Because he thinks primitive.
Who did this.
Ooh. Yeah.
That's actually a point that I was going to make. Ooh. We know who did it.
Who did it?
It's on the adventure. So the name of the name of the adventure is because it's on the whole Candlekeep Mysteries is on D&D Beyond.
Okay.
And that's where I read it. Okay. So the Book of Cylinders, an adventure for 6th level characters, is at the top of the page, written by Graham Barber, developed and edited by Kim Mohan. I might be pronounced Mohan, I'm not sure. But I looked up Kim Mohan, and it turns out that he has been with D&D in some form since 1986. He was brought on by Gary Gygax in 1986 when he founded New Infinities Productions. Let me see. I need to find the exact title that he was. Yes. So with Wizards of the Coast, because he was with the company in some way or another, basically through all of this. When TSR was sold to Wizards of the Coast, he was the lead editor of the Dungeons and Dragons 3rd edition design project. Mm-hmm. Until he was promoted to managing editor during the second half of the design stage. So this dude is OG D&D. He's been around for a while, has been working on this for a long time. Okay. And so I think that's where he's 71 years old.
Oh, okay. Look,
I'm not going to sit here and say Kim's a bad dude.
Yeah.
He clearly on some level is very good at his job, because he's been with the company for so long, and he even retired in 2013 and they still brought him back. Unless it's a different Kim Mohan.
Okay,
maybe it's a different Kim.
Which would be wild if it's a truly different person.
Maybe we just shouldn't keep bringing him back. No, I'm joking. You know, like, that's all well and good for nostalgia and stuff. It's just that, like, again, with unconscious bias, all those things are just telling me that you have a particular...
Yeah, it's probably an unconscious bias.
Yeah, it's not a bad... Okay. It may not necessarily be, like, the most... you might not be a terrible human. You might not be, like, an SS-wielding Nazi racist, right? But this thing comes in a spectrum, right? And we have unconscious biases, whether we like to admit them or not. Everybody does, regardless of race. So when you sit down and look at something and you're editing it, maybe bear in mind that the language that you think is wildly appropriate for this situation, and you just think you can cast such language away, bear in mind the impact that has when you are putting that into POC hands. Like, don't do that.
Yeah. You can look up pictures of the guy. He does look white.
Yes, he is definitely a white man. Here's my issue, right? Here's my big thing, is the fact that this has been an argument now that has been going on for some time, and Candlekeep Mysteries has been released way after sort of everything that happened last year and a lot of the conversations that happened last year, and the kind of general consensus that Wizards of the Coast acknowledged that they needed to do better. And my issue here is, right, going back to actually the interview we did with Caldwell, which where he described the fact that when he was drawing, and when him and his like editors were drawing, they would have sticky notes like on their screen as they were drawing to say, like, make sure there is X amount of this and X amount of that, and don't do this, just to remind them, to refresh them that, you know, let's try and not let our unconscious bias get in the way here. Mm. Okay, so Kim Mohan, and again, I have absolutely nothing against this man or you know, but surely, at some point along this long and illustrious journey that you've had with Wizards of the Coast, did no one hand you the post-it note? Did no one in Wizards of the Coast say, hey, maybe let's just, like,
probably
primitive,
not, retired
savage...
in 2013.
Well,
and when was 5th edition released? Wait, I need to look at this up.
Wizards Hot 60? Maybe just let him stay in retirement.
He edited Dragon Magazine for a long time. Like, he's legit.
No,
he's
that's,
been involved.
That's good.
But,
congratulations.
Yeah. I think that explains it. I think that explains it. Is that
yes?
He's...
I think it does too. But that's what I'm saying. That's for me. Then that is a failure on the part of the company to either fail to sort of acknowledge this and actually therefore tell the people who need to be told, like, hey, we're going to avoid this language. We're going to try and shift to using more, you know, descriptors and more, you know. Yeah. And again, this is not like, I want to like be very, 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 very clear that we are not saying in any way that you can't say and write bad stuff about bad people and all this kind of thing. This absolutely, of course, has space within the context of fantasy and D&D and everything like that. Of course it does. Mm-hmm. But we have to diversify the language that we use. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Mm. I am Unati level vexed right now that we have a POC writer here, mm-hmm. writing about an experience of being told they were brought on as a new writer very recently, and then still feeling like that opinion then was not listened to and processed in an appropriate way.
Yeah.
Because one of the things which we said last year when we first started out, right at the beginning, we know this isn't going to be a quick fix for Wizards of the Coast. We know this isn't going to be a process of just like, hey, like, Three Black Halflings is here, so D&D ain't racist anymore. Like, we knew that was not going to be the case.
It's not the British government releasing their racism report, you know?
Yeah, oh, don't even, that is a whole, people need to strap in if they want to hear that episode.
Patreon exclusive.
Yeah, Patreon exclusive.
When we get to talking about British racism.
Yeah.
Specifically strap British
in.
Governmental racism.
No, guys, remember, racism doesn't exist in the UK anymore. Remember, the government said so. Remember,
oh,
it doesn't exist.
No, the government did, it's like marking your own homework. Hey, look, guys, we did great.
We
did fucking great.
In the words of the future king, the royal family is not racist. Most definitely not racist.
No issues
way.
Here.
Okay, sorry to derail that. Sorry, I'm in a protesting mood. I'm in a protesting mood.
Unati.
Okay, so Kim Mohan retired from Wizards of the Coast on May 31st of 2013. Mm. Fifth edition of Dungeons & Dragons was released on July 3rd of 2014. So
what is he
really
doing?
It sounds like they just brought this dude back to work on this.
Okay,
that's
cool.
What it sounds like.
Okay, cool. Fair enough. But sorry to have cut you off there, Jasper. But I think I think one of the other things that is kind of really getting my goat is, and thank you for reminding me, you know, okay, diversity just with the mouth, you know, with the words and the talkie-talkie is not good enough anymore. Sidikiwe, like, we're tired. We've been going to diversity meetings and debates. We've been going to the panel discussions. We've been chatting. There are books written. There are academics writing about structural racism and how to do things in the workplace and whatnot. You yourselves wrote a statement saying that you will do better. I ask you, where? Because you see now you see now here, it's not just good enough. Now, I know you've done some other good things. I'm in a protesting mood. I'm not just vexed at you.
Yeah, I just want to thank Wizards of the Coast really for sponsoring this episode of Three Black Halflings.
I love you guys. I love this game. Thank you thank you so much for the
contribution. Should we do the plug now?
Thank you so much for your contribution that you've made to the world and my life and my tables and my friends. But guys, now you've got to pull your finger out your ass and like put your money where your mouth is, like, because people are watching. Yeah, like, and I still love you, but do better.
Come on.
I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed.
I have a point to make actually on that. Recently, I watched this, I think last week, D&D Beyond released a video called Portraying Asian Themes and Ideas in D&D. It's a very good video. You guys should all check it out.
Awesome.
But okay, we'll put a link.
In the video, one of the guests wrote an adventure for the Candlekeep Mysteries and is talking about the inclusion that, like, the way that he approached including Asian themes in Candlekeep Mysteries.
Okay.
And he seems quite pleased with how things turned out. So it seems like we have a tale of two different creators who just ended up getting treated very differently.
Both of these creators
are POC. Mm. Yeah. Let me find the name of the writer real quick. What is his name? Daniel Kwan. Daniel Kwan was the writer for, and I don't know which adventure he wrote for. I'd have to rewatch the video, but I'm like 99% sure it's in Candlekeep Mysteries, and he seems to have been pleased. Like, he never talks about, like, I had a great op. I don't think he says, like, I had a great time working with wizards. But at the same time, he's talking about stuff that he did to be more inclusive and using it as an example for how other people can approach Asian themes and including those things in their games. So it seems like both of these two, like, Graham Barber is also a person of color.
Yeah.
It seems like essentially Graham just got the short end of the stick. And it seems like it's – now, I don't think – I'm not sitting here like, well, sorry, Graham. Sorry, bro. It sounds like this is my impression of what happened, is that Wizards is trying to do better. They brought in some POC writers to write interesting stories that, you know, diversify things. The POC writers did that. They then brought in an editor. Saying, bro, we brought – one of the lead designers of third edition D&D to come and edit your thing. I would be hyped and honored. But it sounds like they may not have given that dude oversight, or like the editor, or they didn't feel comfortable saying, hey, maybe not use the word primitive. But That seems to be where things fell apart. Gotta have the uncomfortable conversations.
Sorry, go ahead.
So I wonder here, Daniel Kwan's adventure is called The Book of Inner Alchemy, and it was edited and developed by Hannah Rose. So it's edited by someone else. So I wonder whether that process was perhaps different
Looking up Hannah Rose to see if I can find the
I feel like Hannah Rose is going to be slightly harder to find, see if you can find.
But then again, I did just find Hannah Rose, professional nerd, D&D editor and game designer on Twitter. Appears to be a white woman, uses she, her pronouns. Seems like Daniel had a better experience working with her than Graham Barber had working with Kim Moen. If that is the case, well done, Hannah, and well done to Daniel. Because it sounds like that one ultimately turned out better.
And I guess that's my thinking here, is that if we're kind of, and that's where I go back to as a whole, as a company here, this is where they need to have a very kind of strict set of like guidance for their editors. If they're not prepared to kind of say, to either make room for POCs at the top of the table, if they're not prepared to say, okay, this year we're going to hire at least one like POC as a lead editor. Do you know what I mean? Or we're going to hire, you know what I mean? If they're not prepared to do that, then they need to have a strict set of like, this is what we're aiming for. We will not be including language like this. We will be, do you know what I mean? We'll be trying to do et cetera, to give them the guidance that they need in order to do their job. Do you know what I mean? Because clearly there has been a a very different experienced by two different people. And it seems like it was just down to effectively, like what United said earlier, oversight. Like, this was not like Hannah. It would appear that Hannah and Daniel had a good working relationship, whereas obviously Graham and Kim didn't seem to have much of a working relationship, at least from Graham's perspective, as there was no backwards and forwards between he very explicitly says in the article that there was no backwards and forwards between himself and Kim in terms of the editorial process.
Yeah, because now that I have some of that context in my mind, I'm going, okay, cool, you've got like a legend working on this. You're just going to assume that he's doing the thing and he's checking in with the writer for notes and approvals. But then because he's like an OG, maybe he's just like, you know what, I'm 71, I've been doing my thing, so I'm just going to do it and hand it in. And I think that like, and like you're saying, Jasper, the protocols have to apply to everyone.
Yeah.
To everyone, no matter who they are. Like, those systems, those guidelines, this is, oh, you have to have at least 3 revisiting dates with new edits with the writer, whatever. That has to happen, no matter who you are.
Yeah. 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 And I would like to make this point.
The project lead on this was Chris Perkins. I mean, he's been around. Chris Perkins
he's
huge in D&D. But I think Acquisitions Incorporated is the thing that I'm most familiar with. But that dude has been involved for a long time.
Long time. I think one point I would like to make, and I think this is sort of me like reaching out to Graham I understand where Graham comes from.
Also, sorry for mispronouncing your name. It's spelled Graeme, which I imagine is spelled Graeme, but if...
No, that's Graeme.
I think that's Graham. Graham. I think that is Graham. It's just because I think we have that spelling, over here. Yeah. I've seen that spelling.
In America, I've only ever seen... I've only ever seen Graham, because we pronounce it Graham, spelled G-R-A-H-A-M. So, yeah.
Well, if anyone knows, please correct us.
If you hear this, Graham.
If you hear this, Graham, then please correct us. What I would like to say is that I completely understand that any amount of like uninformed change to that story, especially in the direction that it went, is going to feel incredibly personal. I think when you are I think one thing that wizards and white people involved within this community need to understand, that it feels like an incredibly precarious position to be a POC in this industry. Like, there is so much that we feel like we have to do, that we have a duty of care to fellow POC gamers.
We're not allowed to
we
be
have
mediocre.
To Yes, exactly. It's exactly that. And so, you know, I know the level of anxiety that I feel about this show, and like how making sure that everything that we put out, everything that we do, represents us in the best possible light. So we're setting a good a possible example as we can. And that's not to say that we always get things right, or that I've always got things right. Absolutely not. But I'm always striving to do that, because it feels like if we drop the ball, or if I drop the ball on this, that it's going to feel, you know, huge for us, where it doesn't for our white counterparts. Like, they don't have the same level of pressure on them for reasons that we've obviously previously identified. And so what I would say then is that for these changes to take place, and for Graham to see himself now in the industry represented in a way that he doesn't feel is his work, I feel like that would be an incredibly hurtful and a negative experience for me. Like, if I was to hand over this episode to like HeadGum and they were to edit out like all of the points we made and make it look like we were just like on Wizards of the Coast side or something, like or to take out all the points where like we've said this isn't fucking good enough or whatever because we don't want to upset Wizards of the Coast, I would be so hurt by that. Like, it would be a really difficult thing for me to do, because you've taken my words, you've taken my work, and you've changed it into something that I don't think is representative of what I set out to make. And so feelings of love and warmth to you, Graham. I can only imagine that this is probably a very testing time. And I think that I just really want to reinforce that point. And this is not to say that this is to say, if you see a POC in the industry that's working the hardest to do the thing, like, give them some love. And that's not just us, that's like anyone that you see, because it's really fucking stressful,
guys.
Like, it's really stressful,
guys.
And it's hard and it's tiring, you know, because we have to have these conversations all the time. You know, we don't get to just sit around and just be like, hey, let's talk about, you know, whatever's in our brains today, because we have these things. You know, we do a topical episode, I reckon, at least once, if not twice a month.
Yeah.
Since we've started,
yeah.
There's mm-hmm. been something that we've had to dissect yeah. or that we feel like it's appropriate for us to dissect within the industry. And so it's tough. It's really, really tough. And so... reach out and show some POC some love.
Yeah, yeah.
End of rant.
Yeah, no, very, very, very good rant, because you're absolutely right. There is a tax placed on people of color in the workplace. There's a very excellent chapter in a book called Living While Black and Working as a Black Person or Person of Color in General in any workplace setting. I encourage you to have a read of that chapter, everybody, of all creeds and colors, so you understand the pressure, the perfectionism. I was raised, you have to work three times as hard to get half as far. Can you imagine what kind of like anxiety-inducing thing that must be on you? We do not have the right to be mediocre. We don't have the privilege of being mediocre. We don't have, and we also, by even our parents telling us, we don't have the privilege to make mistakes. And so this must feel like such a massive affront, and it's published and it's going out there in the world with this name on it. I'm sorry, Graham. I'm sending you big hugs. I will bonus action raid on rage on your behalf, okay? It's okay.
I actually wanted to, Jeremy, I wanted to throw out to you quickly, because I remember I don't know if we've had this on air before or not, but like, I remember you saying how like even doing like the Wugadu, like even starting Wugadu, we felt like quite a big moment for you, in the sense that, you know, like you grew up in America, you've come over to England quite a lot, but like your general frame of reference for a lot of African culture isn't necessarily there. And the amount of pressure that you probably felt in starting that adventure and kind of getting it right, you know, in quotation marks. Just what was your experience of that? Because I feel like it's comparable in the sense of, we were putting something out there that, you know, you very diligently wanted to get right. And then if I'd have edited it to make sound like you didn't have a fucking clue what you were talking about, it would have been awful. Right?
So that would have been the end of a few Black Halflings.
Like, I came up.
Jeremy, I've got Kim Mohan, who's going to come and edit Wugadu Adventures for us.
Let's all edit it together.
No. Kim just said leave it with him. Kim said leave it with
him. I will take Kim's draft. We'll go on
a few times. No, it's already out, bro. It's already out.
I will take you out. For me, I came up watching a lot of like online creators, a lot of them associated with, I guess the nickname is BreadTube. I forget where that came from. But like, I used to be into some Channel Awesome creators back in the day and still followed them after they left. So like Lindsay Ellis and people like that. And so I am no stranger to online controversy, because those people get blowback, have got over the years, have gotten blowback from a number of situations, whether it's alt-right people who just hate what they're saying, or in some cases Lindsay Ellis just straight up left Twitter over some blowback from left-leaning people over a comment that she made, basically saying that Raya, the movie, is similar to Avatar: The Last Airbender, which I was not aware was an unpopular opinion, but apparently among some people the comparison feels racist. And because of my experience watching that as a fan, and then in some cases seeing stuff from the creators talking about the backlash that they've received from various situations, I had like a real sense of fear, like not just like, oh, I might get backlash. It's not even just that, because I also recognize that certainly as an American, I may be a Black American, but I'm still an American culturally. And I know that America has not always the best. They have a pretty negative, stereotypical view of Africa as a continent, to the extent that sometimes people will think of Africa as a country. I once had a conversation with a guy who said that he refused to visit the continent of Africa because some communities were struggling with Ebola at the time. A very educated man. It was very frustrating.
Okay, cool.
That's a whole other episode. But the point is, I did not want to come come in and add to that sense of hurt, essentially. I did not want to come in and hurt people. And I also know that we have a lot of fans from marginalized communities, and I want to, in terms of DMing and creating a world, try and be representative of those communities. And the fear of, like, if somebody's already from a marginalized community, you don't want to be the person piling on to that. You want to be the person who tries to give them something that they actually can enjoy freely. And so there and still is, to a degree, a tremendous amount of pressure that I felt and feel going into that, because it's like, oh, I have to get it right. And, like, yeah, for those same reasons, I think it's a similar vein, I think, to what Graham was doing, except he was like, I want to bring this back in, because he explicitly says the Gripply existed previously. He wants to bring them in, introduce them to a new generation of players, and also essentially diversify the way, as you were saying, Jasper, that D&D deals with these issues. And he was undermined. There's no question. He was undermined, and most of the things that he was like the crux of what he was really trying to bring was stripped from his work without his knowledge or consent. And I would feel real bad if when I came in with all of this stuff, like you said, you just drastically re-edited the whole show.
And it's suddenly, a good thing. Honestly, it's a good thing you haven't re-listened to Wagadu like the early episodes, because the editing is heavy. I just thought if we appeared more white, we'd be more popular. That was
You've had me dubbed with somebody who sounds they sound almost identical to me, but they're just a white person.
Yeah. They do a really good impression of Jeremy.
Yeah.
It's funny when you're talking about that. It really reminds me of there was an incident where a place I'd worked before, where I raised a potential issue, where something I was like, oh, I worry this is going to come across in the wrong way. The person who had put that out there was a person of color, and was like, oh, this is fine because of this. And I was like, yes, that is absolutely understand. And I think I'm hoping this will be like for context for white folks or even POC who haven't yet kind of come across this idea of like, we need to be always perfect. And so basically they were like, oh yeah, because this, right? And I went, oh, that's great, but no, audience don't get that. Like, we are very explicit about our blackness on this show. So I hope by now you've realized we're all black. Do you know what I mean? Like, we're like three black halflings.
Yeah. It's
like,
not about a separate group of halflings.
Exactly.
Hella black.
But in the instance of where I used to work, in the instance of Wizards of the Coast and Graham's work, there isn't the context, right? Like, if you are reading through Candlekeep Mysteries and you get to that particular adventure and you do have a problem with the use of the word primitive, you have zero context that this was written by a POC who was attempting to do something that was not, you know, hurtful or harmful, etc. So it was the same thing in my workplace. It was like, you have to understand that your audience is not going to have the context that you are now giving me, either the context that you are a POC or the context that you're giving me in terms of what you're attempting to do. And so that is the issue that we run into here, right? Is because if we misplace or misstep as a POC and it's received in the wrong way, then people go, oh, I have no context to know whether that's just a white person being racist or I'm just getting the wrong end of the stick. And most people will go to, this is probably just some racist shenanigans. Do you know what I mean? That'll be like if you're reading Candlekeep Mysteries and you see the word primitive, you probably think, oh, this is just some more Wizards of the Coast racist stuff. Do you know what I mean?
And when you go if you look it up, you're like, oh, Graham Barber wrote this, I'm gonna go tweet angrily at Graham. And you when you go to his Twitter page, you don't, assuming that I was on the right page, because I think I was, you don't immediately see a photo of him. So you might tweet a bunch of stuff, not even knowing.
Yeah, sending rage his way that he doesn't deserve. Guys,
I get why he posted this, because I'm sure that, you know, there would be people who would be like, oh, he just posted this to complain and he wasn't respecting the contract.
Or
and he just wanted the publicity from the, he just wanted the publicity and the clout boost from the controversy.
Hey, but like, get some clout, bro. I don't care. Get some clout. Yeah, you deserve some. We got to get some clout. somewhere.
There's a possibility of that, but I feel like it's more likely that this dude was trying to be like, yo, hey, I really care about this adventure. This is what has happened to it. I want to make it very clear. All this stuff was not me. Because he even said he wants his name taken off of future releases.
Yeah, that was the thing. That was all he asked for, right?
The credit for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then
the main thing he asked for.
He Alan Smithied himself.
Then give him that. Give him that, you know, or say, don't even...
Nah, get him paid and re-release the adventure. That would be my advice.
Yeah, Wizards of the Coast, you need to, look at that contract and give the man that content back so we can give this real-ass adventure because now I'm psyched to play it.
Yeah. Honestly, I would be willing, I think it would be cool. I don't think he can... But it would be great if somebody released a version of this in all of the original ideas.
Graham
to be there.
So. Graham or anyone who's adjacent to Graham, who doesn't, who isn't afraid of these. Just see if anything happens. A docket happens to land on TV.
Garber.
Hey everyone, welcome to Three Black Halflings. We've got a special episode featuring Braham Garber. How are you doing today?
I haven't seen this spelling before. Is that Irish?
He's just like, top of the morning to you. Yes, it is. If that docket happens to fall across TBH, desk.
I would play it. I would legit play it if that happened.
Yeah, we'll just play through the adventure.
Yeah, it seems like it's short enough to get through in one or two sessions.
Yeah,
100%. We'll play through the adventure. We'll change enough stuff that wizards can't get angry at anyone, including Braham Garber, in case.
How much do you have to change content? Like, it's 20% legally, right?
20%.
20%.
Yeah, cool. We can run the adventure. We can just run the adventure.
We do not encourage anyone to engage in copyright infringement.
with some additional stuff added that we found on DM's Guild, released by somebody, Braham Garber.
Yeah.
Maybe pronounced Bream, I'm not sure. Braham Garber.
Braham Garber.
Braham Garber.
Braham Garber. Oh, man. Yeah. Look, guys, it feels a little, I'm glad that you brought to my attention, Jeremy, the adventure written by Daniel Kwan. That has made me feel a little more soothed, as some balm to my, you know what I mean?
It feels like we have a more complete picture of what was happening on this particular adventure. It's not some evil cabal. Yeah. It was just being like...
Trying to ruin everyone's day.
Crush their dreams. Hire them and crush their dreams.
I was very, very stressed.
But I do think... I would like to say that I've said it so many times on the show, and honestly, I'm genuinely open to having this debate with anyone. Come on the show, email, whatever it is. Like, if you're listening to this and you have an idea of how this stuff works, but I've experienced this in so many places that I have worked, and I've seen it in so many other places and spoken to people. Can someone please tell me, when things like this happen, what is the genuine issue with being more forceful with this level of change? What is the genuine issue with bringing people in at a higher level, like actually putting the legwork in to go out and find someone who is appropriately experienced enough to work as a lead editor at Wizards of the Coast, who is of color, etc. I remember it took, even after a lot of the Me Too movement happened, it took such a long time, and there's still companies that are like, yeah, we're gonna get there by 2039. What, do you know what I mean? Like some date they throw out.
Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah, I mean, like George Floyd's court case is happening right now. I've been watching that in the mornings during my breakfast.
Yeah,
like,
such joys.
You know what I mean? So,
but this is what I'm saying. We're a year on from that. We're many years on from the Me Too movement. There's a whole lot of discussion around the stopping Asian hate and talking about the systemic racism that Asian people feel. There's a whole lot of conversation about the trans community and their place in our society and how we treat them. And I just don't understand where the pushback comes when you are a multi-million dollar company. Like, let's not forget that Wizards is not some small time run by a group of friends kind of company here. This is a big company. You can afford to pay someone some extra G's every year to come in and be the lead on this stuff. Someone will be brave enough to do this, I am sure.
Hire James Mendes-Hodes to read through these adventures before.
Give James Mendes-Hodes his flowers.
Yeah.
Just give him everything. Give him the keys. Give James the keys.
It's usually discomfort and fear of change. Like, it's usually discomfort.
James for Wizard CEO.
Yeah, make him. Campaign hashtag James for CEO.
I wanted to mention that
James is the new wizard.
As just a side thing to kind of tie in with the themes of what we were talking about in terms of people of color in the workplace feeling like they have to try and step up. There's a really good song that's actually worth checking out. Maybe we can share it. I don't know, on Twitter, by Sly and the Family Stone from their very first album. I think the album's called A Whole New Thing, I believe, and the song is called Underdog. And it's, if you want to check out a really good song, that the lyrics are very relevant to the kinds of feelings that people of color experience in any sort of meritocracy or alleged meritocracy. Definitely, and honestly, in society in general, definitely check that out, because it's true. It's something that's in the back of your mind, and I don't think it's something you. I don't think you can be aware of it unless you grow up in that environment.
Yeah.
And it's been an issue since then.
Yeah.
And we're still talking about it now.
Yes. Yeah, which is, you know, kind of, but maybe, you know, we should, I want to say, that one thing I do think is really positive though. And one thing that I think is very good is that seeing the outflock of support that happened for Graham when Graham released the story. And I think that the intelligence that it was approached to, like there was, I feel like there was, I saw slightly less reactionary burn wizards to the ground stuff and more kind of like, this was where you need to do better because of this, this, and this, and this. And I feel like that's something that I feel like is different from like a year ago when we first started. And I, that is not me saying that we did that. That's not, please don't get confused. We don't, you know, we don't have that many listeners, not yet. Do you know what I mean?
We solved
racism. But what I'm saying, We did. No, we did.
I'm kidding.
At least we made it more. No, we just made it more sparkly. That's what we were, more sparkling. This is me. we just put some sheen on it.
We added the carbonation back in.
Gotta happen. Oh, gotta happen. But no. But I would say that
when you drink.
But that generally warmed me a little, and I think that we hopefully are getting to a point where you know, they'll realise that we are as a community able to, we have power and we can talk with our wallets and with what we do and where we go and etc. And that if things don't change,
I'll,
you know, maybe we'll see.
You know?
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, maybe we'll go see what Masks is saying. Maybe we'll go see what, you know, let's just all play Wagadu. Everyone just plays Wagadu now, and then, you know, then we'll see how quickly Wizards probably buy Wagadu or something. I don't know. Alan, don't sell Wagadu to Wizards.
Yo.
Don't do it.
Kim
they'll
takes
Google,
over.
They'll like Google or whatever, or Facebook it. They'll just,
they bring in Kim as the new leader of Twin Drums.
Oh my god, imagine the shit show.
Oh my word. Oh my word.
Sorry, Kim. You clearly have done actually a lot of really good work.
I know. But you walked straight into this one. Like, you walked straight into this one. Yeah. Foot in mouth.
Yeah.
Foot
yeah.
in yeah. mouth.
Foot in mouth. So, on that note, halflings, we are probably about done. I think this was we covered most things here. I'm proud of us. We kind of stayed on topic for like a full 50% of that episode, and I'm proud of us.
Well done.
So well done us. If you liked this episode and you're enjoying what we do, please feel free to drop us a review on whatever podcasting app you're using, because it really helps new halflings find us.
Yeah.
So thank you for that.
What's the website?
Also,
somebody shared on the Discord, actually. Let me say the name.
Oh,
because there's a specific website. Where was it?
We don't have many reviews.
Yeah, I'm trying to find.
It's okay.
Where it was. Was it in general? Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
We have a shocking. Yeah. This is to quote one of our. This is a quote, Elizabeth Wilcox from our Discord. Thank you, Elizabeth. She mentioned that she's noticed that Three Black Halflings is a shockingly small number of reviews on Podchaser.
Podchaser, everyone.
In the month of April, Podchaser is running something called Reviews for Good, where they're donating a small amount to Meals on Wheels for every written review of a podcast or podcast episode of at least 20 characters in length. So
what?
You can not only support us, but support Meals on Wheels.
Woohoo!
Go do some good.
Go to Podchaser and leave a review on every episode of the show.
I'm going
to
go do that.
Is it weird if you review our show?
I just
want to give money to Meals on Wheels, really.
Yeah, this is great. This is great. I'm going to go donate and review. This is great. This is perfect. I'm excited. Great shout out. There. So head over to Podchaser, everyone, and review the show and do some good at the same time. Dreamhack Halflings now number one on Podchaser. Proud of you, Halflings. That's what I want to say next week. If you are also enjoying this and you want some more TB Halflings in your life, feel free to check out patreon.com/TB Halflings, where there is now, guys, did you know there is 50, we've done 50 posts on our Patreon, and we have nearly 100 patrons, which is wild. Right on the cusp. So feel free to check out that out, and you can also follow us at TB Halflings. If you want to follow me, you can. I am JW_Cartwright on the Twitters, and I am at Jasper W. Cartwright on Instagram.
Ooh.
Sorry, that was a random reference to a Jake and Amir episode I was listening to earlier today. Yunati, where can people find you on the twits?
Oh, LU Lewis Nyao on Twitter and on Instacracks, Luyanda Lewis Nyao. There's no cohesion here.
Instacracks is the new name for it. Love it,
I actually
everyone.
Have both a Twitter and an Instagram. I have never tweeted or posted any pictures. If you find me, feel free to follow me. I don't know that I'll ever release any content through either of those platforms, but you'll know.
You'll know that you found me in your heart.
We will make Jeremy join.
A couple
Twitters.
People have already found the Instagram and followed it. And I'm sorry if you're disappointed, but welcome to the quiet show.
The quiet show. You just sit and you should have a podcast called The Quiet Show where you just sit.
I got an Instagram
occasionally
because
I had
like a media class in college that I had to make a Twitter for, and I got the Instagram so that I could support one of my friends because she does art. In fact, go check it. If you follow me on Instagram, also follow Leoma Arts on Instagram.
Yeah.
I'm just going to drop that there. That's, or I guess Leoma, but L-E-O-M-A, M as in Mark, A, period, A-R-T-S, Leoma Arts.
Ooh.
Yes, actually, whilst we're shouting out friends, our friends Vatuk as well, I would love to quickly shout out Jonathan Charles. Jonathan Charles has now got some stuff online. If you haven't listened to our most recent episode where we discussed bards and all things bard, our resident bard, or bard in residence, as it says on his Instagram, you can find him over at the_lonely_orchestra over on Instagram. You can see this incredible instrument that he's built during lockdown, and you can see what a talented musician that he truly is. So please go and give the Lonely Orchestra some love over on Instagram. Thank you very much, Shire Folk, for listening to this recent episode, and I hope you're very, very well and safe. So long, Shire Folk!
So long, Shire Folk!
So long, Shire Folk!
Brr, 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 brr.
See you later, Kim.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.